To get along without him from now on, said Simon, turning onto the street.
He's not dead, Isabel said. Hardly anyone's ever killed a greater demon. You have to kill them in their physical and ethereal forms before they'll die. We just scared him off.
Oh. Simon looked disappointed.
What about Madame Dorothea? Will she be all right now that...
He broke off because Alec had begun to choke, his breath rattling in his chest. Jay swore under his breath with vicious precision.
Why aren't we there yet?
We are here. I just don't want to crash into a wall.
As Simon pulled up carefully at the corner, Clary saw that the door of the Institute was open, Hodge standing framed in the arch. The van jerked to a halt, and Jace leaped out, reaching back to lift Alec as if he weighed no more than a child. Isabel followed him up the walk, holding her brother's bloody feather staff. The Institute door slammed shut behind them. Tiredness washing over her, Clary looked at Simon.
I'm sorry. I don't know how you're going to explain all the blood to Eric.
Screw Eric, he said with conviction.
Are you all right?
Not a scratch.
Everyone else got hurt, but not me.
It's their job, Clary, he said gently. Fighting demons, it's what they do, not what you do.
What do I do, Simon? She asked, searching his face for an answer. What do I do?
Well, you got the cup, he said, didn't you?
She nodded and tapped her pocket.
Yes.
He looked relieved.
I almost didn't want to ask, he said.
That's good, right?
It is, she said.
She thought of her mother and her hand tightened on the cup.
I know it is.
Church met her at the top of the stairs, yowling like a foghorn, and led her to the infirmary. The double doors were open, and through them she could see Alec's still figure, motionless on one of the white beds. Hodge was bent over him. Isabel, beside the older man, held a silver tray in her hands. Jace was not with them. He was not with them because he was standing outside the infirmary, leaning against the wall, his bare, bloody hands curled at his sides. When Clary stopped in front of him, his lids flew open, and she saw that the pupils of his eyes were dilated, all the gold swallowed up in black.
How is he? She asked as gently as she could.
He's lost a lot of blood. Demon poisonings are common, but since it was a greater demon, Hodge isn't sure if the antidotes he usually employs will be viable. She reached to touch his arm.
Jace.
He flinched away.
Don't.
She sucked in her breath.
I never would have wanted anything to happen to Alec. I'm so sorry.
He looked at her as if seeing her there for the first time. It's not your fault, he said. It's mine.
Yours?
Jace, no, it isn't. Oh, but it is, he said, his voice as fragile as a sliver of ice. Mea culpa. Mea maxima culpa.
What does that mean?
My fault, he said. My own fault, my most grievous fault. It's Latin. He brushed a lock of her hair back from her forehead absently, as if unaware he was doing it. Part of the mass.
I thought you didn't believe in religion.
I may not believe in sin, he said, but I do feel guilt. We shadow hunters live by a code, and that code isn't flexible. Honor, fault, penance, those are real to us, and they have nothing to do with religion, and everything to do with who we are. This is who I am, Clary, he said desperately. I am one of the Clave. It's in my blood and bones. So tell me, if you're so sure this wasn't my fault, why is it that the first thought in my mind when I saw Abaddon wasn't for my fellow warriors, but for you? His other hand came up. He was holding her face, prisoned between his palms. I know. I knew. Alec wasn't acting like himself. I knew something was wrong. But all I could think about was you. He bent his head forward so their foreheads touched. She could feel his breath stir her eyelashes. She closed her eyes, letting the nearness of him wash over her like a tide. If he dies, it will be like I killed him, he said. I let my father die, and now I've killed the only brother I ever had."
"That's not true," she whispered.
"Yes, it is."
They were close enough to kiss, and still he held her tightly as if nothing could reassure him that she was real.
"Clary," he said, "what's happening to me?"
She searched her mind for an answer and heard someone clear his throat. She opened her eyes. Hodge stood by the infirmary door, his neat suit stained with patches of rust.
"I have done what I can. He is sedated, not in pain, but..."
He shook his head.
"I must contact the Silent Brothers. This is beyond my abilities."
Jace drew slowly away from Clary. "How long will it take them to get here?"
"I don't know."
Hodge started down the corridor, shaking his head.
"I'll send Hugo immediately, but the brothers come at their own discretion."
"But for this..." Even Jace was scrambling to keep up with Hodge's long strides. Clary had fallen hopelessly behind the two of them and had to strain her ears to hear what he was saying. "He might die otherwise."
"He might," was all Hodge said in response.
The library was dark and smelled like rain. One of the windows had been left open, and a puddle of water had collected under the curtains. Hugo chirruped and bounced on his perch as Hodge strode over to him, pausing only to light the lamp on his desk.
"It is a pity," Hodge said, reaching for paper and a fountain pen, "that you did not retrieve the cup. It would, I think, bring some comfort to Alec and certainly to his..."
"But I did retrieve the cup," said Clary, amazed. "Didn't you tell him, Jace?" Jace was blinking, though whether it was because of surprise or the sudden light, Clary couldn't tell.
"There wasn't time. I was bringing Alec upstairs."
Hodge had gone very still, the pen motionless between his fingers.
"You have the cup?"
"Yes." Clary drew the cup out of her pocket. It was still cold, as if contact with her body could not warm the metal. The rubies winked like red eyes. "I have it here." The pen slipped from Hodge's hand entirely and struck the floor at his feet. The lamplight, thrown upward, was not kind to his ravaged face. It showed every etched line of harshness and worry and despair.
"That is the angel's cup."
"The one," said Jace. "It was..."
"Never mind that now," said Hodge.
He set the paper down on the desk and moved toward Jace, catching his student by the shoulders.
"Jace Wayland, do you know what you've done?"
Jace looked up at Hodge, surprised. Clary noted the contrast. The ravaged face of the older man and the boy's unlined one, the pale locks of hair falling into Jace's eyes, making him look even younger.
"I'm not sure what you mean," Jace said.
Hodge's breath hissed out through his teeth.
"You look so much like him."
"Like who?" said Jace in astonishment. He had clearly never heard Hodge talk this way before.
"Like your father," Hodge said, and raised his eyes to where Hugo, black wings stirring the humid air, hovered just overhead.
Hodge narrowed his eyes.
"Hugin,"
he said, and with an unearthly caw, the bird dived straight for Clary's face, claws outstretched. Clary heard Jace shout, and the world was whirling feathers and slashing beak and claws. Bright pain bloomed along her cheek, and she shrieked, instinctively throwing her hands up to cover her face. She felt the mortal cup yanked from her grasp.
"No!"
she cried, grabbing for it. An agonizing pain shot up her arm. Her legs seemed to go out from under her. She slipped and fell, striking her knees painfully against the hard floor. Claws raked her forehead.
"That's enough, Hugo," said Hodge in his quiet voice.
Obediently, the bird spun away from Clary. Gagging, she blinked blood out of her eyes. Her face felt shredded. Hodge had not moved. He stood where he was, holding the mortal cup. Hugo was circling him in wide, agitated rounds, cawing softly. And Jace. Jace lay on the floor at Hodge's feet, very still, as if he had fallen suddenly asleep. All other thoughts were driven from her mind.
Jace!
Speaking hurt. The pain in her cheek was startling, and she could taste blood in her mouth. Jace didn't move.
He's not hurt, said Hodge.
Clary started to her feet, meaning to fling herself at him, then reeled back as she struck something invisible, but as hard and strong as glass. Infuriated, she struck against the air with her fist.
Hodge! She shouted.
She kicked out, nearly bruising her feet on the same invisible wall.
Don't be stupid. When the clay finds out what you've done...
I'll be long gone by then, he said, kneeling over Jace.
But... A shock ran through her, a jolt of electric realization.
You never sent a message to the clave, did you? That's why you were so weird when I asked you about it. You wanted the cup for yourself.
Not, said Hodge, for myself.
Clary's throat was dry as dust.
You work for Valentine, she whispered.
I do not work for Valentine, said Hodge.
He lifted Jace's hand and drew something from it. It was the engraved ring Jace always wore. Hodge slipped it onto his own finger.
But I am Valentine's man, it is true.
With a swift movement, he twisted the ring 3 times around his finger. For a moment, nothing happened. Then Clary heard the sound of a door opening and turned instinctively to see who was coming into the library. When she turned back, she saw that the air beside Hodge was shimmering, like the surface of a lake seen from a distance. The shimmering wall of air parted like a silver curtain, and then a tall man was standing next to Hodge, as if he had coalesced out of humid air.
Starkweather, he said, you have the cup?
Hodge raised the cup in his hands but said nothing. He appeared paralyzed, whether with fear or astonishment it was impossible to tell. He had always seemed tall to Clary, but now he looked hunched and small.
My Lord Valentine, he said finally, I had not expected you so quickly.
Valentine. He bore little resemblance to the handsome boy in the photograph, though his eyes were still black. His face was not what she had expected. It was a restrained, closed, interior face, the face of a priest with sorrowful eyes. Creeping out beneath the black cuffs of his tailored suit were the ridged, white scars that spoke of years of the stele.
I told you I would come to you through a portal, he said.
His voice was resonant and strangely familiar.
Didn't you believe me?
Yes, it's just... I thought you'd send Pangborn or Blackwell, not come yourself.
You think I would send them to collect the cup? I am not a fool. I know its lure.
Valentine held out his hand, and Clary saw, gleaming on his finger, a ring that was the twin of Jace's.
Give it to me.
But Hodge held the cup fast.
I want what you promised me first.
First? You don't trust me, Starkweather?
Valentine smiled, a smile not without humor in it.
I'll do as you asked. A bargain is a bargain. Though I must say I was astonished to get your message. I wouldn't have thought you'd mind a life of hidden contemplation, so to speak. You never were much for the battlefield.
You don't know what it's like, Hodge said, letting out his breath with a hissing gasp. Being afraid all the time.
That's true. I don't.
Valentine's voice was as sorrowful as his eyes, as if he pitied Hodge. But there was dislike in his eyes, too, a trace of scorn.
If you did not intend to give the cup to me, he said, you should not have summoned me here.
Hodge's face worked.
It is not easy to betray what you believe in, those who trust you.
Do you mean the Lightwoods or their children?
Both, said Hodge.
Ah, the Lightwoods.
Valentine reached out and with a hand caressed the brass globe that stood on the desk, his long fingers tracing the outlines of continents and seas.
But what do you owe them, really? Yours is the punishment that should have been theirs. If they had not had such high connections in the clave, they would have been cursed along with you. As it is, they are free to come and go, to walk in the sunlight like ordinary men. They are free to go home. His voice, as he said home, thrilled with all the meaning of the word. His finger had stopped moving over the globe. Clary was sure he was touching the place where Idris would be. Hodge's eyes darted away.
They did what anyone would do.
You would not have done it. I would not have done it. To let a friend suffer in my place? And surely it must engender some bitterness in you, Starkweather, to know that they so easily left this fate to you. Hodge's shoulders shook.
But it is not the children's fault. They have done nothing.
I never knew you to be so fond of children, Starkweather, Valentine said as if the idea entertained him. The breath rattled in Hodge's chest.
Jace, you will not speak of Jace.
For the first time, Valentine sounded angry. He glanced at the still figure on the floor.
He is bleeding, he observed. Why?
Hodge held the cup against his heart. His knuckles were white.
It's not his blood. He's unconscious, but not injured.
Valentine raised his head with a pleasant smile.
I wonder, he said, what he will think of you when he wakes.
Betrayal is never pretty, but to betray a child, that's a double betrayal, don't you think?
You won't hurt him, whispered Hodge. You swore you wouldn't hurt him.
I never did that, said Valentine. Come now.
He moved away from the desk toward Hodge, who flinched away like a small trapped animal. Clary could see his misery.
And what would you do if I said I did plan to hurt him? Would you fight me? Keep the cup from me?
Even if you could kill me, the Clave would never lift your curse. You'll hide here till you die, terrified to do so much as open a window too widely. What wouldn't you trade away? Not to be afraid any longer. What wouldn't you give up to go home again?
Clary tore her eyes away. She could no longer bear the look on Hodge's face. In a choked voice, he said,
Tell me you won't hurt him, and I'll give it to you.
No, said Valentine even more softly. You'll give it to me anyway.
And he reached out his hand. Hodge closed his eyes. For a moment, his face was the face of one of the marble angels beneath the desk, pained and grave and crushed beneath a terrible weight. Then he swore pathetically under his breath and held the mortal cup out for Valentine to take, though his hand shook like a leaf in a high wind.
Thank you, said Valentine.
He took the cup and eyed it thoughtfully.
I do believe you dented the rim.
Hodge said nothing. His face was gray. Valentine bent down and gathered up Jace. As he lifted him up lightly, Clary saw the impeccably cut jacket tighten over his arms and back, and she realized that he was a deceptively massive man, with a torso like the trunk of an oak tree. Jace, limp in his arms, looked like a child by comparison.
He'll be with his father soon, said Valentine, looking down at Jace's white face. Where he belongs.
Hodge flinched. Valentine turned away from him and walked back toward the shimmering curtain of air that he had come through. He must have left the portal door open behind him, Clary realized. Looking at it was like looking at sunlight bouncing off the surface of a mirror. Hodge reached out an imploring hand.
Wait! He cried. What of your promise to me? You swore to end my curse.
That is true, said Valentine.
He paused and looked hard at Hodge, who gasped and stepped back, his hand flying to his chest as if something had struck him in the heart. Black fluid seeped out around his splayed fingers and trickled to the floor. Hodge lifted his scarred face to Valentine.
Is it done? He asked wildly. The curse, is it lifted?
Yes, said Valentine. And may your bought freedom bring you joy.
And with that, he stepped through the curtain of glowing air. For a moment, he himself seemed to shimmer as if he stood underwater. Then he vanished, taking Jace with him.
20. In Rat's Alley.
Hodge, gasping, stared after him, his fists clenching and unclenching at his sides. His left hand was gloved with the wet, dark fluid that had seeped from his chest. The look on his face was a mixture of exultation and self-loathing. Hodge! Clary slammed her hand into the invisible wall between them. Pain shot up her arm, but it was nothing compared to the searing pain inside her chest. She felt as if her heart were going to slam its way out of her ribcage. Jace, Jace, Jace. The words echoed in her mind, wanting to be screamed out loud. She bit them back.
Hodge, let me out!
Hodge turned, shaking his head.
I can't, he said, using his immaculately folded handkerchief to rub at his stained hand. He sounded genuinely regretful. You'll only try to kill me.
I won't, she said. I promise.
But you were not raised a shadow hunter, he said, and your promises mean nothing.
The edge of his handkerchief was smoking now, as if he'd dipped it in acid, and his hand was no less blackened. Frowning, he abandoned the project.
But Hodge, she said desperately, didn't you hear him? He's going to kill Jace.
He didn't say that.
Hodge was at the desk now, opening a drawer, taking out a piece of paper. He drew a pen from his pocket, tapping it sharply against the edge of the desk to make the ink flow. Clary stared at him.
Was he writing a letter?
Hodge, she said carefully.
Valentine said Jace would be with his father soon. Jace's father is dead. What else could he have meant?
Hodge didn't look up from the paper he was scribbling on.
It's complicated. You wouldn't understand.
I understand enough.
Her bitterness felt like it might burn through her tongue.
I understand that Jace trusted you, and you traded him away to a man who hated his father and probably hates Jace too, just because you're too cowardly to live with the curse you deserved.
Hodge's head jerked up.
Is that what you think?
It's what I know.
He'd laid his pen down, shaking his head. He looked tired and so old, so much older than Valentine had, though they were the same age.
You only know bits and fragments, Clary, and you're better off that way.
He folded the paper he'd been writing on into a neat square and tossed it into the fire, which flared up a bright, acidic green before subsiding.
What are you doing? Clary demanded. Sending a message.
Hodge turned away from the fire. He was standing close to her, separated only by the invisible wall. She pressed her fingers against it, wishing she could dig them into his eyes, though they were as sad as Valentine's had been angry.
You are young, he said. The past is nothing to you, not even another country as it is to the old, or a nightmare as it is to the guilty. The Clave laid this curse on me because I aided Valentine. But I was hardly the only member of the Circle to serve him. Were the Lightwoods not as guilty as I was? Were not the Waylands? Yet I was the only one cursed to live out my life without being able to set so much as a foot outdoors, not so much as a hand through the window.
That's not my fault, said Clary. It's not Jace's fault. Why punish him for what the Clave did? I can understand giving Valentine the cup, but Jace? He'll kill Jace, just like he killed Jace's father.
Valentine, said Hodge, did not kill Jace's father.
A sob broke free from Clary's chest.
I don't believe you. All you do is tell lies. Everything you've ever said was a lie.
Ah, he said. The moral absolutism of the young, which allows for no concessions. Can't you see, Clary, that in my own way I'm trying to be a good man?
She shook her head. It doesn't work that way. The good things you do don't cancel out the bad ones. But, she bit her lip,
if you told me where Valentine was...
No.
He breathed the word.
It is said that the Nephilim are the children of men and angels. All that this angelic heritage has given to us is a longer distance to fall.
He touched the invisible surface of the wall with his fingertips.
You were not raised as one of us. You have no part of this life of scars and killing. You can still get away. Leave the Institute, Clary, as soon as you can. Leave and never come back.
She shook her head. I can't, she said. I can't do that.
Then you have my condolences, he said, and walked out of the room.
The door closed behind Hodge, leaving Clary in silence. There was only her own harsh breathing and the scrabble of her fingertips against the ungiving, transparent barrier between her and the door. She did exactly what she'd told herself she wouldn't do, and flung herself against it again and again until she was exhausted and her sides ached. Then she sank to the floor and tried not to cry. Somewhere on the other side of this barrier, Alec was dying while Isabel waited for Hodge to come and save him. Somewhere beyond this room, Jace was being shaken roughly awake by Valentine. Somewhere, her mother's chances were ebbing away moment by moment, second by second. And she was trapped here, as useless and helpless as the child she was. She sat bolt upright then, remembering the moment at Madame Dorothea's when Jace had pressed the stele into her hand. Had she ever given it back to him? Holding her breath, she felt in her left jacket pocket. It was empty. Slowly, her hand crept into the right pocket, her sweaty fingers picking up lint and then skidding across something hard, smooth, and round. The stele. She bounded to her feet, her heart pounding, and felt with her left hand for the invisible wall. Finding it, she braced herself, inching the tip of the stele forward with her other hand until it rested against the smooth, level air. Already an image was forming in her mind, like a fish rising up through cloudy water, the pattern of its scales growing clearer and clearer as it neared the surface. Slowly at first, and then more confidently, she moved the stele across the wall, leaving searingly bright, ash-white lines hovering in the air before her. She felt when the rune was done and lowered her hand, breathing hard. For a moment, everything was motionless and silent, and the rune hung like glowing neon, burning her eyes. Then came a sound like the loudest shattering she had ever heard, as if she were standing under a waterfall of stones, listening to them crash to the ground all around her. The rune she had drawn turned black and sifted away like ash. The floor trembled under her feet. Then it was over, and she knew without a doubt that she was free. Still holding the stele, she raced to the window and pushed the curtain aside. Twilight was falling, and the streets below her were bathed in a reddish-purple glow. She caught a glimpse of Hodge crossing a street, his gray head bobbing above the crowd. She dashed out of the library and down the stairs, pausing only to shove the stele back into her jacket pocket. She took the stairs running and hit the street with a stitch already forming in her side. People walking their dogs in the humid twilight jumped aside as she barreled down the walkway along the East River. She caught sight of herself in the darkened window of an apartment building as she careened around a corner. Her sweaty hair was plastered to her forehead, her face crusted with dry blood. She reached the intersection where she had seen Hodge. For a moment, she thought she'd lost him. She darted through the crowd near the subway entrance, shouldering people aside, using her knees and elbows as weapons. Sweaty and bruised, Clary pulled free of the crowd just in time to see a flash of tweed suit disappear around the corner of a narrow service alley between two buildings. She wriggled around a dumpster and into the mouth of the alley. The back of her throat felt like it was burning every time she breathed. Though it had been twilight on the street, here in the alley it was as dark as nightfall. She could just see Hodge, standing at the far end of the alley where it dead-ended into the back of a fast-food restaurant. Restaurant trash was piled outside, heaping bags of food, dirty paper plates, and plastic cutlery that crunched unpleasantly under his boots as he turned to look at her. She remembered a poem she'd read in English class. I think we are in Rat's Alley, where the dead men lost their bones.
You followed me, he said. You shouldn't have.
I'll leave you alone if you just tell me where Valentine is.